you can rely on Atlas Butler for all of your plumbing and drain service needs. Our expert plumbers and drain specialists can take care of anything, from a broken water heater to a clogged drain. One call truly does it all.
Atlas Butler is built to keep you comfortable, and our plumbing services are no exception. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
This is a CNA podcast.
I'm Lin Su Ling, and welcome to another episode of Heart of the Matter, where we take a deep dive into one of the biggest news stories of the week. Who would have thought Singapore would roll out 4 budgets in 4 months to deal with the impact of the coronavirus pandemic? Yet here we are at the conclusion of Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister Heng Swee Keat's Fortitude Budget, announced in Parliament this week, bringing the total bill on Singapore's counter-COVID packages to just under $100 billion, with more than half coming from the reserves. Can Singapore pull off a robust response? Will it be enough to help businesses and workers ride out the coronavirus storm? What does the future hold in this period of great uncertainty, and how can Singapore lay the groundwork to better position ourselves for the months, even years ahead? Now, joining me to cut through these issues are Chee Hong Tat, Senior Minister of State for Trade, Industry and Education.
Morning.
Sumit Agarwal, Loh Tak Kwong, Distinguished Professor of Finance at the NUS Business School.
Good morning.
And Joanne Kuo, Assistant Chief Executive Officer, Strategy and Development at the Singapore Business Federation.
Good morning.
Now, SMSG, maybe we could start off with you.
Certainly.
There were many big numbers in this budget, 4 budgets, 4 months, almost $100 billion backing Singapore through this COVID storm, aims to create almost 100,000 jobs and training opportunities. But just to take a step back, tell us, what are your top line thoughts about where we are right now?
Thank you, Suli. I think we started off having a strategy to protect lives, to protect jobs, and also to protect our future. So that remains the approach that we will take in tackling this crisis. And at different stages, the emphasis will shift, and what different stakeholders will need to do would also need to evolve. So in the first phase, and that was initially when we see a rise in the number of infections, the priority then was how to bring the infection under control. And that's why we had to introduce painful but necessary measures like circuit breaker, so that we don't let this infection numbers rise too quickly within the community. And I think after doing that, we can see some positive results. The numbers have come down. So now we are ready to move into the next phase, which is how do we then start to reopen our economy and to resume social activities in a progressive manner. Starting from 2nd of June, that will be the first phase. We will be opening more economic activities, social activities. In terms of the economic activities, under phase one, we will see activities resuming up to about 80% of our GDP. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that 80% of the people are back at work, because many people will still continue to work from home. And many of the business activities may not go back to their previous levels. So I think we have to be patient. This will take time. It will be gradual. But we will want to do this together with our businesses to move gradually, carefully, but definitely to open more and more over time. We do need to protect jobs. We do need to protect livelihoods. And this is also an important time for us to work with our businesses to transform their operations to be ready for the future.
I just want to bring in Joanne and Sumit here, just to zoom out a little bit before we dive into the details of each phase of transition. Now, Sumit and Joanne, I just want to return to the first Unity budget in February when the effects of COVID-19 began to become apparent to us. I recall then the responses were positive, but I recall also that people and businesses were really bracing themselves, asking for more help, really wondering if government would do more if things got worse. Now, with the power of hindsight and 4 budgets later, do you think government has covered these bases sufficiently, or do you think there's more that expected that you're still waiting out for?
The government has come out very strongly in terms of budget responses and also in a very timely manner. The view is that all these have given businesses the confidence to continue with their operations as well as to tackle the challenges ahead.
The government has done quite a lot. Remember, this is a fluid situation. It's very dynamic. Things have been changing almost week to week, not within Singapore. Singapore is a small open economy, so Singapore also gets dealt blows from outside. And there was these people incoming into Singapore who were actually potentially bringing the virus here. And so the government had to react based on the circumstances that were on the ground at that time. So overall, the government has done a lot. Cumulatively, the stimulus packages, that 20% of the GDP GDP. That is unprecedented for a small country. The dividends of this will be in the years to come, where people will see the stability and the confidence in the country. And that will bring back essentially talent and also investments to the country.
I just want to go into what Joanne said about businesses having confidence. So now that we are months into the COVID outbreak, what is your report card on whether you think businesses have found their footing, they're in a stronger position to deal with these challenges, presumably aided by government schemes? Or do you think they're still winging it as they go along? What's your sense on the ground?
We have to recognize that the current crisis that we are facing is just purely unprecedented. And unprecedented on a couple of aspects. First of all, it's global in nature. And also because we have all the different challenges coming to us on multiple fronts and at the same time. So we have health challenges, addressing the virus, addressing the ability of the workforce and businesses to function, things like supply and demand. There's local demand as well as there's demand from overseas, as well as disruptions in supply chains. At the same time, there are cost issues to be addressed. Fixed cost, variable cost. Variable cost, it goes down, but fixed cost, it does take some time to address. And SMEs in particular are acutely impacted. So while the government has come out in a robust manner to help cushion the efforts, and we are very grateful for it, we feel that because the situation is so fluid, we need to actually look at it as we come along. And we do have the confidence with the government backing us. And like what Sumit said, the government response measures have been unprecedented and we are very grateful for it.
But SMS Chi, Joanne brought the idea of costs and the government has also talked about managing cash flow for businesses. Yet a chief emphasis that many have pointed out across all four budgets this time has been jobs in helping businesses hold on to staff. Why this central tenet? Is this a paradigm shift from the traditional focus on helping businesses when the going gets tough? And what is Singapore's strategy here in riding out the COVID-19 storm when the emphasis is on jobs?
So Lin, this is a crisis of a generation and we have been through this before. If you recall, when we first became independent and the British withdrew, that was also a crisis that the generation at that time had to overcome. I think this emphasis on jobs has always been there. When we help businesses to grow, it is not just to achieve that GDP growth number. It is actually in the end to provide good jobs for our people with good incomes and to support livelihoods. So I think that is the approach that we must continue to focus on, because ultimately what matters most in this environment is to ensure that our people have good jobs. But this is not something that will come automatically. Prof. Sumit earlier talked about investments, talent, you know, how we respond to this crisis, how we transform our economy. Those will be important factors.
But looking ahead, after the circuit breaker measures are lifted, the wage support scheme, which used to be at 75% during then, is going to come down despite the fact that there is some refinement of categories for some sectors to receive more support. So how concerned are you all about businesses and workers looking at this in the face? Is unemployment a chief concern looking at the worrying picture in the US and other economies where unemployment levels have reached levels that experts have described Great Depression levels?
That's why, Suling, we have to focus on jobs and making sure that we can not just flatten the infection curve, we also flatten the unemployment curve. And this is going to be a priority for us to work together with our tripartite partners. But to take one step back, you can't create jobs without actually the government and the private sector working together. And you must have companies that are able to continue to grow. Then they can create the jobs. Then they can hire the people. Government, of course, will do our part. There are some jobs that government will have to fund, government will have to create, because you know these are not jobs that private sector on their own will do. So I think it takes a partnership approach, both public sector as well as private sector. But you need to create those jobs, train the people for them, place them into those jobs.
If I may add on, one thing that we are particularly cheered about from the business community is that the current Fortitude budget, not only does it address the immediate concerns of workers, businesses and community, it is also forward-looking in nature. There are measures to help companies to cope with the new normal after pandemic through digitalization of processes. There are generous digitalization support packages such as bonuses to adapt to e-payments, digital resilience bonus. But at the same time, there's also a set of robust measures to create opportunities for displaced workers and new entrants to the workforce through the enhanced SG United traineeship and skills program, the hiring incentive, as well as the formation of the National Jobs Council.
Let me just try to pick up on Joanne's point. There are three kinds of people who are displaced in terms of jobs right now. One is somebody who had a job who actually has the skills, but his job is gone. And what the government is doing with the latest budget is allowing that person to be absorbed in again in the labor force. The other person is who had a job, but the skill set doesn't match anymore because the economy has transformed because of COVID. So that person needs to go back and actually be retrained or get skill upgrade. And the third person is like somebody who's brand new, who's just looking for their first or second job. That will be difficult for them to get at this point because the unemployment rate is higher, businesses are slow to hire. So that person could be hired as an intern for a short period of time. And in the longer run, they could be absorbed in the labor force. So essentially, the way the government has done it is they're trying to cater to all these three group of people who want to enter the labor force back again. And there are different ways and different approaches to absorb them into the labor force.
I want to pick up on something that Joanne had mentioned about digital transformation, which actually has been a key second prong of the budgets that we've seen so far, enabling businesses and workers to adopt digital technology. Now, DPM Heng had said that our economy is undergoing a sea change. We must stay on course. But he also said time is running out. Please act fast. He urged leaders to take advantage of schemes to speed up digitalization. Why is digitalization that answer, that direction, SMSG? And is there a burning bridge that the Singapore government is seeing that maybe we could benefit from understanding that a little bit more?
That the necessity to transform and to use technology to help us to become more productive, more competitive, actually already started even before COVID. But what COVID does is it accelerated these trends. And there's now an even greater impetus. You mentioned about a burning bridge. This is the burning platform. Now, if you don't change, you don't transform, you may not be able to survive. But beyond survival, we are also trying to help companies to build, because you do need to be ready for this new environment, this new normal that companies and workers will have to operate in. Customers will have their preferences changed after experiencing this pandemic. Supply chains will change, business models will change. So are we ready for this future? Transformation, digitalization is not the only answer, but it has to be part of the answer.
So Sumit and Joanne, are firms going far enough beyond surviving the day-to-day in COVID-19? Are they restructuring to survive? Do you get a sense that most workers and employers are finally waking up and crossing that threshold to reskill and adopt digital technologies?
I've read somewhere that in terms of digitalization, we've seen over the past 8 weeks or so, the progress that we have seen over the past 5 years. So going digital is no longer an option for companies, but rather a matter of survival. So that's where we see the pace of companies adopting digitalization accelerating. I'd like to urge companies to actually heed the government's call to accelerate the digitalization efforts, particularly when there is strong support and assistance from the government to do so. The pace may not fast enough, but we should pick it up faster. Use the time that the government has bought through the Fortitude package and the various assistance scheme provided to expedite the transformation efforts.
I'll add on to that and I'll give you a sense from actually data. I've been collecting data from LinkedIn, which is maybe part of the way you can think about this question, where I know people who are looking for jobs and what are the jobs advertised in Singapore. I'm doing it broadly around the world, but let me just focus on Singapore. And what you see is this job response has come back. Number of ads that are being put or people looking for jobs has also gone up. So clearly, both the demand side of the labor market and the supply side of the labor market are back up in Singapore. The supply side is not back up as much because, you know, it takes a while for people to be able to go back into the labor force. But companies are hiring again. And where the biggest impetus has been is in technology-related jobs or somebody who can actually bring in technology or IT or actually fintech and use that as a way to provide a labor. I think we will see that more so. But the good thing that I observe that if you look at the number of jobs available in America, they're still down by around 30%. But in Singapore already, they're back to where they were in January.
So Sumit, you raise a great point about leaders. The flip side of that is also laggards. And SMSG, presumably as CB kicks in, most businesses, retail, F&B hawkers, would naturally have seen a sort of a wholesale migration to e-commerce platforms. It's do or die. But then why is digital transformation given added urgency? Is your sense that this move has not been as rapid or widespread? And where does everybody think is the bottleneck here?
Well, I think the adoption has been patchy because we are having a wide range of different types of SMEs. Some are more ready than others. Some are actually born digital. When they first started, you know, they may be a startup, but they are actually already all plugged in. And some are traditional businesses. They do need to first change their mindsets, be willing to try new technologies. They need some help as well. So I think we need not just one solution. We need a range of different options that can cater to different groups of companies. But the end objective is the same. Help as many companies as possible to adopt new ways of doing things, digitalization, technology, so that they can continue to operate even in the new environment, continue to serve their customers and earn revenue. And I think this is going to be an important part of our new economy so that it can also create jobs, as what Prof. Sumit mentioned. And this has to be something that I think we need a tripartite partnership to give it a push.
Let me add something. I've done some work before COVID itself, and I was trying to understand what does Payla actually do to the Singapore economy in terms of to the consumers and businesses. And what you find is that adoption of Payla itself increases small business growth in Singapore by around 3%. And these are really small businesses who rely on this. Even if you go to hawker centers, if they can use Payla to take money, that makes their workforce more efficient. And this is good for even the customer and the businesses. Now, COVID actually accelerates this whole process and actually makes these businesses more efficient going forward, and the labor force can actually work better and the consumer will also benefit.
Could I give you an example of how a very traditional business has actually adopted technology?
Sure.
This is a store selling spices at Tekka Market. The store owner's name is Mr. Shahu. So what he did was he started on this process in March this year, used online platforms to add on to face-to-face interactions with his customers. And he has seen, after adopting this new approach, that the number of online sales has actually increased. And now about 30% of his revenue comes from online e-commerce. And the nice thing about this story is this. The chief technology officer for this whole effort is actually Mr. Shahu's 67-year-old mother, who before this knew nothing about technology, but she took the plunge and said, I'm going to try, and she made it work. So it shows that, you know, as long as you're willing to try, we're willing to experiment with these different platforms and solutions, it can be done.
But that's the thing. We've talked about how technology will be digital and that's scary. But the reality is that the bottleneck might be the human being who stays analog, and where a key prong for digital transformation might be the human factor and even retraining even. Is there a sense that maybe COVID has caused companies to focus on the here and now? Joanne, do you have a view on this? Is there any feedback from companies that you're hearing so far?
Most definitely, because now it's actually a matter of survival. Either they adopt it and then have a chance of moving forward, or they don't adopt it and basically see their businesses deteriorate. And I think you do see instances or at least evidence where adoption has increased. For example, the adoption of PayNow Corporate. Since the start of the COVID situation, the banks have been telling us that the number of companies that have signed on to use PayNow Corporate have increased significantly. And we definitely hope that businesses can also share with one another to help overcome the inertia or what may be fears previously in terms of adopting technology as well as best practices on what they can use for their various operations and then move forward together.
SMSG, are you saying that you're worried about seniors and this rapid shift towards digitalization? DB Anking also talked about a deferment of CPF contribution rate increases for seniors, and people are sensing that it's a sign that seniors are most vulnerable when it comes to retrenchments and layoffs. What's your take?
Well, I think we are concerned about workers from all age groups, because, you know, from the student who is leaving university, polytechnic, ITE, looking for a job, to the young working adult, to the mid-career, someone who in his 40s and 50s, to our seniors. I think everybody will face different sets of challenges, and we want to try and help everyone. I think we have to accept that with this crisis of a generation and the economic disruption that's happening, some sectors will go through a very challenging time, and it will not be possible to save every company or even to save every job. But we must help every worker, help the workers to transit to a new job. And this will require training. This will require teaching them new skills and also finding new opportunities, creating new job opportunities that we can then place them into. That is something which we will focus on. For seniors, I think it's because for many of our seniors, when they went to school, it was a different world. Technology didn't feature as much. But today, this is very much part of our daily lives. But I'm confident that actually we do it the right way. We reach out to our seniors with proper training. I think many of them are able to adapt. But we need to do it in a way which, you know, can help them to do this step by step.
I understand also that your advisor on the reopening of the economy when it comes to F&B and retail, and there have been feedback that some of them want to resume operations as soon as possible. There was a survey by the Federation of Merchants Associations that said 20 to 30% of mom and pop shops may go belly up in 4 to 6 weeks if they had to stay shuttered. Is there anything you can share with us on what the task force is looking at? Is there a sneak preview of perhaps what conditions you're thinking of in allowing that reopening, not in this phase, of course, but in subsequent phases? And how soon can we expect that?
We hope to allow our businesses to open as soon as possible. But the consideration must also be to balance this with protecting lives and ensuring safety. So one of the key messages that we have been reaching out to all our stakeholders is this. Please start to prepare so that we can prepare to start. And we have to do the preparations now. Get ready all the safety measures. How do you open safely? And at the same time, allow the businesses to be able to earn revenue after they restart. So I think this is something which requires very sectorial approach, because every sector will have their own set of challenges. I mean, retail shop, quite different from F&B dining in, quite different from, say, an enrichment center. So I think we do have to look at each one sector by sector, but this is an ongoing effort. Our government agencies working together with the trade associations, working together with the companies and workers, making these preparations so that when conditions allow, we can reopen. I think an important part of this will include the use of technology to enable us to operate safely and continue to serve our customers.
What would that look like? What kinds of technology are you looking at? What kinds of safety measures are you thinking of?
So for F&B dining, I think it's a mixture. It will be, of course, you need safe distancing, right? So you need to control how many people can go in at one time. You do need to also look at different types of technology-enabled solutions, like, you know, how do you order? How do you pay? And for the businesses, it's also about how do you then continue to operate and earn revenue from other sources? Because let's take F&B dining. You're not going to expect the same volume of customers, partly because sitting capacity is going to be reduced, right, with safe distancing, but also because customers themselves may not come back in the same numbers as before. A data point I can share with you is Kidzania in South Korea reopened. The number of customers that returned was only about 20 to 25% of the previous level. So there is a shift as well in terms of customer preferences. So I think we must expect this. And therefore, if you're an F&B business, how do you continue to operate? How do you continue to survive? Will also depend on whether you can earn revenue from other sources.
Could you share some thinking about what those conditions are? Is it just the safe distancing rules that we already are aware of that restaurants have put in place before circuit breaker measures? Is that going to be enough? Do you see even further distancing? What's the sense in terms of, you know, then helping businesses plan ahead? Because people are and eateries are trying to make plans so that they can prepare and ensure that they adhere to all the rules and regulations.
Yeah, we are in discussion with them. So with the Restaurant Association, with the Federations of Merchant Association of Singapore, the Retail Association, I think the specifics really, I think, would of course include some of these measures that we've done before, but I think we can go further. Also to give consumers confidence that when they come back, their safety will be protected.
What would going further look like though?
So the specific measures, the task force is still discussing with the retail, F&B, and other businesses, but it's a combination of safe management, safe distancing, as well as the use of digital technologies. But one important aspect is this. It's not just about the physical setup. It is also about when the workers come back and when they interact with one another, including during the period when they are not at work, but they are resting. All that, I think, need to be looked at carefully so that it is a complete package to ensure safe management. The other point I want to highlight is this, that during this period when businesses are unable to open, we will continue to support them. So that's why the part of the Fortitude budget also included an extension of some of the existing relief measures like JSS and rental rebates. So all these are intended to be able to help businesses who are unable to open until later.
I'm glad you brought that up because there is also a sense that there's some expectations when infections spike, restrictions will come back down, the circuit breaker. So Joanne and Sumit, are you getting a sense that businesses expect kind of the same level of support from government if circuit breakers have to be slapped on again? Do you think that businesses are expecting that it'll be twinned with wage support and all the other assistance?
Businesses may not have thought so far yet. It's more taking things step by step. And now the preoccupation is with preparing for opening. One thing that I would have to highlight, and that's sort of like taking on from what SMS Chi has mentioned, is that even when businesses open, they can't expect the demand or the volume to be the same as pre-COVID days, simply because there is a drop in consumer confidence and spending, as well as we expect consumer behavior to change. So it's actually important for businesses to pivot, identify alternative channels in terms of pushing out their products and services. It won't be business as usual.
Let me add on to that. I think we should not completely say, what will the government do for us? I think also businesses and consumers have a responsibility. When we reopen, we should keep safe distancing. We should make sure if we feel unwell, we should not be going out to eat. If an employee is not well, they should make sure they are taking a day off, or the business owner should say, you don't need to come in. Just the case I heard about in America, there was a hair salon cutter. She showed up for the business and she infected around 80 people. So I don't think that is the worst thing we want going forward, that we open up and we as individuals or business owners don't do our part. And then again, we see spikes in cases. That is something we don't want. And we'll have to again rely on government to bail us out.
Sumit, I'm glad you brought up the point about business responsibility and individual responsibility in order to get to the new normal. But you've written this op-ed in Yahoo recently this week where you say that you don't expect the economy to get back to full potential until the beginning of the first quarter in 2021 and not earlier. And you also said that one way to shore up the economy is public spending, because right now private consumption is almost zero. So looking ahead, are you expecting a fifth budget if this situation persists?
That will depend on how this plays out. And I say I equally blame the consumers and businesses. If we don't do our part, there most likely will be a spike again. And we will again have to rely on the government to give us another handout. I don't think we should be in that situation. But the nature of business and the nature of the economy will change. And the real circuit breaker kicked in the second quarter. So we will see again a dip in the GDP. We should not expect things will just bounce back immediately. This will take time, and it should take time. We should not immediately start going out like what you see in the US. People are back again at the beaches. That is for sure going to cause us trouble. And we are looking for again a second spike in cases.
I just wanted to add on and taking some reference from what Professor Sumit has mentioned, that we should not always be looking to government to provide all the assistance and the measures, because government can only do so much and our reserves are finite. We are very grateful to have our reserves built up over time through decades of prudence. But the community should also take the necessary steps to actually support one another. And for larger businesses, there is also scope to help one another and the community, be it by paying their suppliers, their vendors on time, bringing forward their contracts in terms of recruitment, if they're able to bring forward their recruitment, and for landlords to also support their tenants in forms of waiver rentals or deferments in a timely manner. But it's something that the community as a whole needs to come together, and the answers are not with government alone.
Yeah, I would fully support what Joanne and Prof. Sumit have spoken about, because the government will do more, but government alone cannot do everything. We need all hands on deck. We need everyone on board. And I think this is a crisis that is facing our whole country and our whole generation. And I think this requires everybody to step forward. But those who are able to, companies that are still able to hire, please do so. If you are not able to hire as many as before, but you can offer a mix of both internship, traineeship positions, as well as job positions, please do so. For those who really are unable to hire, then of course government will have to come in and to be able to provide some of these public jobs, public sector jobs, or publicly funded jobs, including some that are required to fight COVID. That is our strategy. We need all hands on deck.
I'm glad you brought up that being stronger together, coming together, public trust is so important when you need everyone hands on deck. That the government is also able to draw from reserves, as what Joanne said, is also because he has a strong mandate. But that mandate is ending in April 2021, and DPM Heng today said that the sooner the GE is held, the sooner Singapore can tackle challenges. Do you think that's the key reason why the GE might be held sooner rather than later if conditions allow for it?
DPM has already shared his views on this one and considerations in terms of the timing. We know that the timing, regardless of when you hold it, the most important thing, as DPM said, is that safety is paramount. So I think that's really the key consideration that we have to ensure safety. And that's the same consideration as when we do reopening of our economy. We should never compromise on safety. So there has to be safe reopening. And that's why the preparations are so important. That's why the safe management measures are so important.
Just rounding off this podcast, then if I could get Sumit and Joanne to weigh in and then SMS Chi to round it off. Speaker of Parliament Tan Chuan Jin has said that the fortitude budget will be debated in Parliament next week. So what are your expectations of that debate?
I actually expect robust support for the fortitude budget. It's unprecedented and we should just press on together.
I agree. I think all the four budgets have been measured. They've been calibrated to the situation that it was needed for. And this budget is, again, let's open up the economy slowly, carefully. And how do we provide jobs? How do we help businesses? And I think there's nothing that you can tweak in here. I think that's well calibrated. The question is now going forward, are we all going to do our part and make sure that the economy stays open and we don't have a spike again?
SMSG, you have the last word.
I fully agree with what Joanne and Prof. Sumit have said. Our plan is both to tackle the short-term challenges to survive, but also to tackle future challenges to build and to prepare our people, our companies, our workers for this new normal. This is something that we have to do concurrently, because if we only focus on survival, then we are actually not going to be ready for the future. We do need to focus on helping our companies and our workers to tide over this crisis. So that's why there are elements of both in the budgets. At the end of the day, a very key outcome that we must achieve together must be to stay cohesive and to continue to be able to grow so that we are able to provide good jobs, new opportunities. We are able to make Singapore to, you know, remain attractive to investments, remain connected to the world, stay relevant in the world, because that is, for a small country, that is our karma. We have to do that in order to survive, in order to thrive. And if we don't achieve this, then it's actually going to be very difficult to continue to have the resources to look after the vulnerable groups, to be able to create the opportunities for this generation and future generations. So I will place a lot of emphasis on the way forward to really how do we transform and build and be ready for the future.
Well, there you have it. Thank you, Senior Minister of State Chee Hong Tat, Sumit Agarwal, and Joanne Guo for joining us today for this lively debate on the challenges facing the Singapore economy in a coronavirus world, and what can be done to help businesses adapt and workers hold on to jobs. Heart of the Matter is available on the CNA website and app under the podcast tab. Subscribe to us also on Spotify or iTunes so you don't miss an episode. The team behind this podcast, Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and research writer Erin Low. And I'm your host, Lin Tzu Ling, signing off.
When someone is hurt in a truck accident, the one question everyone has is, why did this terrible collision happen? To answer that question takes an experienced team of lawyers and experts. Not everyone has this type of experience. At Colombo Law, we are truck injury lawyers. It's what we do every day. When someone is hurt by a truck, Colombo Law is the law firm people call to get answers. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.